Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 17th of January, recording at 9:53 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. The Asian stock markets were strong across the boards. The biggest gain was the China A-Share Composite Index, which was up 4.2%. The Hang Seng Index was up 3.25%. And the Hong Kong Enterprise H-Share Enterprise Index, HSCEI, would have been up at least 3.25%. In Australia, good gain here, up 1.65%. Now, in the European stock markets, which were quietly firm yesterday, we had some upside follow through, with gains up to 1.82% for the DAX index. In the Americas, we had two in the minus column, although only slightly. Mexico, which has weakened a little bit in recent days, and also Canada, but Canada's down 0.21%. Wall Street closed with some modest gains, which were halved from the day's highs. That put the S&P up 4.5 points to 1293 and change. It had been up a little over 8 points at one stage. And best gain, I guess, was the NASDAQ up 0.64%. And Brazil is up 1.15%. Long-dated government bond prices, mostly a little bit easier. The U.S. dollar is a little easier, although off its lows. The euro pushed up to 128 at one stage. And that was a good gain, but it's currently 127.36. That's still up on the day. And Sterling's been stuck at this round 153 and a little bit of change. Now, in the commodity markets, this was interesting. Copper had another good day, up to 372 and change. All the industrial metals were higher. The precious metals were also higher, although off their highs. Gold is currently trading at $16.52 and a little bit of change. That's up nearly $8.50. Platinum and palladium had some of the better gains here today. And oil prices were strong. The WTI crude is currently up $2.25 at $194. And if I just look at actually we had a much more muted performance by Brent. Brent was up at 112.76 at one stage, but it's currently 111.57. That's up less than a quarter of a dollar. The grain and bean complex is firmer. Most commodities were stronger. I see coffee is an exception to that with a very small decline. Natural gas down to $2.53. That's been really quite weak, and lumber was down a little bit. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, for stock markets, it's been a pretty good run this month so far, and actually it's been a pretty good run since we had the lows in mid-December. I believe that was the third higher low for many of those indices. And the action has been healthy. It looks like support building overall. China, which has been a serial laggard due to all the supply that had hit the market due to the monetary tightening that had taken place in China, and also due to Asia being spooked by events in Europe. We saw that again yesterday following the downgrades over the weekend, and the response of the Asian markets was was to decline, and when Europe didn't go down and actually was up yesterday, they roared back here today. I'm sure that was a factor in the rise. But that 4.2% gain for the A-share index, that creates a higher low. That was a big dynamic. It's encountering support above its base that it saw in that fourth quarter of 2000, small base in between the fourth quarter of 2008 and the first quarter of 2009, which is an understandable support area. Its GDP growth was a factor as well. That came out stronger than people were looking at. You know, when you have an economy that's growing at 8.9%, and I'm inclined to trust the figures, that's pretty good. That's above consensus. And we still get murmurings that we're going to see some additional easing away from what was that restrictive monetary policy in China. So I think there's a good chance that China is one of the better performers among stock markets in 2012. And in terms of the Chinese leash effect, that would have a profound effect on a number of markets. It would make the Asian region stronger. And some of the Asian region is very strong. I mean, the Philippines, for instance, one of the leader currently among four strong Asian, ASEAN stock markets, the others being Thailand and then Indonesia and Malaysia. But that Philippines index surged to a new all-time high last week. Impressive stuff. So, again, a China recovery, thinking of that leash effect, and I don't think it's pie in the sky to talk about it, although, candidly, China went down more than I ever expected it to. I didn't appreciate the amount of supply that was going to be forthcoming. A Chinese recovery would also be bullish for the commodity-producing stock markets. Now, those four ASEAN markets that I mentioned a moment ago are among them. But they would also include Australia, obviously, Canada, Brazil, all of the South American stock markets, actually. And those patterns, those markets have some decent patterns. I mean, Brazil was one of the first to show relative strength in the teeth of last year's weakness. And that's because Brazil was first to cut its interest rates. And it looks like it's completing quite a significant support building phase, going to go back up and challenge its overhanging top. So, you know, I feel we're on schedule here in terms of what Fuller Money has been looking for in these stock markets. Now let's take the various different influences. Europe obviously is a big one, but all the hysteria year end about the euro is about to break up, about Germany printing Deutschmarks, about Greece being thrown out. I mean, this isn't going to happen. Greece might eventually call a referendum and ask to leave, but I think they're better off hanging around here and seeing what kind of a haircut they can elect from the bondholders, because they're certainly not going to be able to pay off their existing debt. And growth is going to remain a big problem for Europe for quite a long time. And the debt overhang is going to remain a big problem for Europe for quite a long time. But the main point is it's not going to implode. And again, I've described it as a political constraint, a political construct all along. And if they want to hold it together, they can. And now that they've got the ECB on their side, which is doing its own version of quantitative easing, so they're obviously going to float away a lot of that debt. And quite frankly, they've created a bit of a Ponzi scheme here, because the banks borrow from the ECB at those cheap rates. Remember, they borrowed over 500 billion euros from the ECB on a three-year basis, and they can borrow more. And then they can take that money and they can deposit it with the ECB, or they can go in and buy some of these European sovereign debt issues. That's not a bad trade if you're picking up the Italian 10-year bonds, for instance, at a yield near 7%. And you're only paying 1% for your money, and you know that the ECB is also buying the bonds. And I describe it as a Ponzi scheme because that same commercial bank can go around and borrow more money for the ECB and then put it into other sovereign debt issues, again, knowing that the ECB is also buying those same instruments to keep yields from exploding. Once again, but the big difference between this Ponzi scheme and a Madoff or any other type of Ponzi scheme is that those fall apart when they run out of people who are willing to put up a sufficient amount of new money to offset the withdrawals that are occurring. And of course, the ECB is printing the money effectively that's going into this. So this can go on for years, and it probably will. Does it mean that Europe is an attractive growth area? No, far from it. But does it mean that Europe sort of muddles along here with a somewhat weaker currency? The answer is almost certainly yes. And that is a big change in terms of expectations, because it allows the rest of the world to get on with what they want to do. And now that Asia is easing monetary policy somewhat, growth is likely to pick up in that region. So that all looks pretty good. And then the American economy, that certainly has plenty of debt problems, but we've also got a very accommodative Fed still at work, and I don't see that ending anytime soon. And that's not bad for the stock market overall. So where's the bad news? Well, aside from the fact that a European Ponzi scheme and a huge U.S. government debt overhang is a serioso problem, the bad news that I think we need to be more concerned about, or at least we need to keep a watchful eye out for. Everybody's looking at Europe, and is that going to collapse, or is something going to go dreadfully wrong with the United States? Well, the real risk in here, as far as stock markets are concerned, in my opinion, is the next spike in crude oil prices, because supply and demand is too evenly balanced. I've said before that the last decade was a tough one in terms of supply-demand, a risky one, and we saw the effects of that in the first half of 2008 when the crude oil price spiked. And I've also said on a number of occasions that this current decade is a tricky one, and we saw the spike in crude oil prices in the first quarter of last year. And whenever that happens, it is GDP growth that suffers. So if we were to get another spike in crude oil anytime soon, that would cause a problem. Now, there are reasons for feeling that it should not take place, because it's not that demand is rising so strongly. And supply is gradually increasing, particularly in the U.S., where the shale oil is being produced. China's demand is still edging higher, but even if it grows by 20% this year, that's going to be another million barrels a day. So we can get through with a little luck, and the little luck involves not having too much global tension. We don't want Nigeria to blow up. We don't want Iraq to blow up. Really, we don't want the military tension, the brinkmanship that Iran, or really the saber rattling that Iran has been engaged in. That drives people into long hedges in the oil market. So we don't want them to bluff us in all probability into higher crude oil prices. That's what we really need to watch. Now, if oil stays where it is, it's not cheap, but it's not at punitive levels. If oil stays where it is, then stock markets are going to have a good year. All right, what else to mention? On currencies, well, the dollar does still tend more often than not to soften a little bit when various financial assets are doing well. I think, in terms of the big trends, I think that as Asian growth picks up again, and that hasn't happened yet, it's still slowing, but I'm expecting it to pick up again before the end of the year, largely because the tighter monetary policy or the central banks in the region back away from that, become a little more accommodative. And I think that will firm up the Asian currencies, which I think have the best long-term growth potential. I think the euro and sterling are going to remain soft, particularly the euro. And well, that will involve a longer-term inflation risk. The immediate problem in Euroland is deflation. And I don't anticipate at this stage, there's bound to be some currency that gets a major move during the course of the year, but I don't think it's going to be the dollar. The dollar may be generally steady, certainly against sterling and the euro. Well, I pretty much said it. The best long-term growth potential lies in the successful Asian countries, in my view. And what about precious metals? Well, the rally continues, and if stock markets have really ended their cyclical bear phase, as as Owen and I have maintained for several months, and that means they've commenced a cyclical bull phase. If that's correct, that's probably a positive influence for gold overall. We did see the vulnerability of gold and other precious metals when there was a flight to cash. But we're not getting that right now. And I think we will see more of that money coming off the sidelines and supporting the various asset classes. And on that note, all the best to all of you.